It's Wednesday, May 11th, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, Tuesday night, the Guardians coming off of the high of that come-from-behind win on Monday, and, could only muster one run against Lucas Giolito. Giolito seems to be one of those guys who every time the Cleveland faces him, he just seems to have one of his better nights.
Yeah, early in his career, the Cleveland really knocked him around a little bit. They kind of owned him, but in the last nine starts, he's 4-1 against the Guardians right now, with like a 0.92 ERA. They're hitting 181 against him. And he struck out 70 guys in 55 innings. So, that was more of the same last night. He was dominant last night.
Yeah, we had seen Cleveland's offense sort of come alive on Monday. And then, guys like Framil Reyes, or I believe Framil's 0-for-8 in the series so far, a bunch of strikeouts. And Giolito just sort of figured out a way to, it's changing speeds. And that was really what he's very good at. He not only throws the changeup off of his fastball, he throws it at like two or three different speeds. And it gives you a lot to think about in the box when you're a hitter. And it really sort of messed with Cleveland's young lineup.
Yeah, and he's really tough against lefties, Joe. Really, kind of dominated them. The Indians had, the Guardians had, like 4 or 5 lefties in that lineup, and they didn't do a whole lot, except for the one guy that does something against everybody is Josh Naylor.
So Josh Naylor is just about as hot as any hitter in baseball right now. If voting for the comeback player of the year took place in May, I think Josh Naylor would have the award locked up.
No doubt about it. When he singled in his first at bat, Tuesday night, that gave him 4 hits in his last 4 at bats. RBI double, grand slam, 3-run homer, and a single, going back to the first game of the series. So he's hitting everything, Joe. He's hitting good pitching, and he's locked in at the plate. And, he's just what the Guardians need right now, I think. They finished this series against Chicago and then, head for a 3-game series over the weekend against the Twins, the first-place Twins.
Yeah, the encouraging thing, the exciting thing to see with Naylor was that the home run last night, after two pretty much moonshots on Monday night that he pulled to the right side, he went down and got a pretty good fastball on the outside part of the plate and drove it to left field and out of the park using all fields. When he's doing that, it's exciting to see because he's staying on the baseball no matter where it's pitched. And, Tito says when he's using all fields, that's when he's at his best.
Yeah, and I think, that's an approach the whole team has taken. But, you usually don't see that from a power hitter. I mean, the power hitters are going to try to yank the ball. That's what they do. That's probably when they eventually find their swing, they do the most damage to the pull side. But it was good to see, Naylor go the other way there.
Well, speaking of somebody who has found his swing and found his stroke, Amed Rosario, another 3-hit game, his second 3-hit game of the series last night. And you've got to start thinking, Rosario's out in left field the last 2 games. It looks like he might be there for a while, the way that Andrés Giménez is hitting and playing defense. Is his versatility one of the most important things for the Guardians right now?
Yeah, I think so, Joe. And I think, this is a key move for Francona. It really makes, I think, his life a lot easier. If Rosario can make the transition to left field and still stay productive offensively, that's going to allow him to play that young infield, you know, with, you know, not counting Jose Ramirez, with Naylor, Owen Miller, Jimenez, and then J-Ram. You're going to get hopefully some production, the same kind of production you got out of left field that Rosario gave you last year. And he was saying last night, Francona, that, you know, when they played Rosario in center field last year, he didn't hit. You know, he only hit when they moved him back to shortstop. Now, you know, he's had a great start in left field. I mean, he dropped the ball the other night, but, you know, he looked really good going, you know, tracking down a couple balls to the track last night. This could be, you know, could really settle that lineup and give them a chance to see what this young infield can do.
Yeah, I sort of thought last year that it was the move to shortstop that really settled him down and got him locked in at the plate, but it was also the timing of it. It happened in May of last year, late May of last year, and it was when the weather was starting to warm up. So maybe, draw a different comparison. Maybe he's more like his Dominican countryman, Carlos Santana, who notoriously didn't like hitting in cold weather. And once things warmed up, he warmed up. Is Rosario just a fan of warmer weather? Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, it could be, you know, and nobody likes to hit in April in Cleveland. I don't think. I mean, you have to be a polar bear, half polar bear, to do it well. So, you know, he has swung the bat well. You know, we've talked about this before. He gives you that dimension of speed when he gets on the bases. You know, I don't think he's going to hit a lot of home runs, but he's a line drive hitter. You know, he's the guy that keeps the line moving, especially at the bottom of the order.
Yeah, last year he was sort of forced into that number two spot in the lineup and was real productive there. What strikes me is everything jumps off the bat of his, and it's on a line drive or it's hard hit on the ground. It's he doesn't miss too often at the plate. When he decides to swing, it's usually pretty hard contact.
Yeah, definitely, and maybe at the bottom of the order he can help you, you know, you keep him out of double play situations, you know, with, you know, guys like Straw and Ramirez getting on base, because he hits the ball, like you said, Joe, he really hits the ball hard. And when he hits it on the ground, you know, the double play could be in order.
Right. So, you know, look, just looks like another sort of facet, another face of that Guardians lineup sort of maybe coming into focus as we move forward too. Sometimes it's tough to pick out, you know, Tito and Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff's vision coming out of spring training, but you know, this is sort of what we're seeing now, where he wanted to go with this infield and with the lineup. And, you know, it's just interesting to see it all sort of, you know, come together and mix together.
Yeah. You know, you know, in spring training, you know, Francona always talks about, hey, it's going to take a little bit of time to feel this out for people to settle into positions. And it's usually just around May where, you know, that the front office and Francona and the coaching staff start to get a feel for this this roster. And I think that's what we're seeing now, Joe. I mean, history is repeating itself.
History repeating itself. I don't know. Last night, Monday night's game, it was the White Sox defense that sort of opened the door for the Guardians' big rally. Last night, it was the Guardians' defense sort of returning the favor. A couple of mishandled pop-ups that led to an opportunity for Gavin Cheats to get an extra strike, and that was all he needed to hit a two-run homer that sort of changed the game at that point. What did you see defensively out of Cleveland's defense, and are there any concerns there?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if there's a concern, but, you know, it certainly extended, you know, that sixth inning for Cal Quantrill, who had pitched really well up to that point, I thought. Jose Abreu, really a dangerous guy, sends a pop-up, you know, in foul territory at first base. Naylor comes rushing over in front of the Guardians dugout, overruns the ball, drops it. But, you know, Quantrill limits the damage and Abreu gets, you know, grounds out. But still, he has to throw extra pitches. Then, you know, with he's so, you know, he gives up a single. to Luis Roberts, but he comes back and strikes out Grandel. So he's two outs, one on. You know, the White Sox are leading 1-0. So he's, you know, he's at the doorstep of getting out of the inning. Then Gavin Sheets sends a fly ball by the grandstand in foul territory at third base. You know, Jose Ramirez makes a long run, gets a glove on the ball right by the fence there, and drops it. And two pitches later, Sheets hit the ball out of the park for, you know, a 2-run homer and a 3-run lead. And basically that was it. It was a tough play. You know, Francona said it was a tough play for Jose. He was going at full speed. He said the ball kind of handcuffed him. But it's a play we've seen Jose make, you know, time and time again. That was, you know, he's really good at that play. And he dropped the ball and he didn't get an error. You know, Naylor got an error. The official score didn't give Ramirez an error because of the, you know, how far he had to go to get to the ball, but still kind of, you know, it opened the door and the White Sox went through it, you know, walked through it.
Yeah. We've seen Jose make plays like that. He's really good at being sort of the only guy on that side of the infield or outfield who has a shot at some of those catches. And, you know, usually always makes them. It's unusual to see that ball pop out of his glove. I'm sure we'll go a long stretch before we see anything like that. But as far as what Quantrill was able to do, he was able to sort of bear down and, give him innings and give him length. But it wasn't – he didn't necessarily finish. And that was the situation. His defense gave him a couple more outs than maybe necessary in that inning. But the pattern that we've seen so far is Quantrill will give you a brilliant outing, but maybe just not enough to finish off and get the win for himself.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I thought the fifth inning was really interesting. He gets the first two guys bottom of the order out in like 6 or 7 pitches. Then gives up a double to Josh Harrison, who's hitting 145 coming into the game. You know, the number 9 hitter gives up a double off the wall in left center. And then Tim Anderson, who's finally woken up in this series, you know, singles through the middle, and it's 1-0. But it's only 1-0, you know. So he'd still pitch really, really well until it kind of got away from him in the sixth inning. But that wasn't really his fault. I mean, it happens. You know, Quantrill still 98 pitches, 71 strikes. I think he threw 72% of his pitches for strikes, Joe. Yeah. You know, the average MLB pit starter throws 63%. So, you know, he was pounding the strike zone. He said he got a little timid, a little tentative in that sixth inning, kind of almost blamed himself for what happened.
Yeah, and it's just interesting. He comes off an outing where he had given up a season high in walks and really what he didn't really walk anybody or too many in the last night's outing. So
he scattered 10 hits, so
yeah. So the trade-off is if I'm going to be around the zone, they're going to hit the ball, and obviously the Chicago lineup is going to hit the ball. Yeah, speaking of hits, there were no hits in the game between the Angels and Tampa Bay last night. Our old friend Corey Kluber started the game for the Rays, but it was the Angels rookie Reed Detmers who faced Cleveland during their West Coast trip last week. Reed Detmers had the 2 weeks ago. I'm sorry. Reed Detmers pitched a no hitter, first individual no hitter of the season after last year. At this time, we had about 5, and all of those were thrown against Cleveland. So. What do you make of Reed Detmers coming through with a 12-0 win against the Rays last night, holding that lineup hitless?
Yeah, I mean, historically the Rays have been no hit a lot, Joe. If you look back, they're one of the teams that it seems like, you know, especially early in their history, they were no hit a bunch. But this is that's a championship lineup. So, you know, he must have done a great job. I didn't see the game, obviously, but you saw him in Anaheim mm-hmm. at the Big A. What did you think of him? Did he make an impression on you?
You know, he pitched enough to get them a win. And that was the thing is with that lineup, you don't really have to do too much. You've got Mike Trout. He homered in the game, Shohei Ohtani. You just have to do enough to get them some runs in that situation. Detmers didn't look dominant against Cleveland, but he did enough to keep Cleveland's lineup, sort of in check. And they really didn't put together. That was when they were really struggling to sort of string hits together. So, I don't know if you can necessarily say you saw this coming, but 9 innings, he only struck out two batters. He struck out two and walked one. So, it was the definition of let him put the ball in play and trust your defense behind you. But at the end of the game last night, Tampa Bay, Kevin Cash puts center fielder Brett Phillips out there on the mound trying to save his bullpen an inning. And Phillips gives up 4 runs on 5 hits, including a pair of home runs late in the game. One of them was to Trout, sort of an unfair matchup, Brett Phillips against Mike Trout. But then Anthony Rendon goes up there and bats left-handed against Brett Phillips, and he hits a left-handed home run.
Really?
This is a guy who's a strictly right-handed hitter, and he goes up there batting left-handed in a major league game against a position player pitching and hit a bomb to right field. So really unusual to see something like that. Really unusual to see that, a major league hitter would go up there and bat left-handed when he's not a left-handed hitter. But that really sort of jumped out in the game for me to see that.
It just goes to show you, Joe. I mean, we don't think of, major, hitters or major league baseball players as really like elite athletes, but to do that, to be able to do that, just come off the bench and just be able to switch sides and hit the ball out of the park. That shows you something, that eye-hand coordination, that thing, that's just natural. Cause I don't think Rendon is hitting, left-handed in BP, he's concentrating on his right-handed swing. It kind of reminds me, of Carlos Carrasco, he could throw lefty and righty, and he could throw lefty probably around 85 miles an hour.
Yeah. That's crazy, is that he can, to be able to throw hard at that, to have the mechanic, the body, awareness and mechanics to be able to pitch from both sides of your body. That's just, it blows my mind. But, there might have been a time in Rendon's career, maybe early on when he was a switch hitter, or, he batted from both sides of the plate, because his swing didn't look like a guy batting left-handed who didn't know what he was doing. So it was actually a low pitch that he golfed out to right field. I don't know. Did you ever swing the bat left-handed? Are you lefty?
No, I'm a righty.
You're a righty. You ever swing the bat left-handed?
Well, I went to a family softball game, picnic. We were playing softball, and everybody had to hit left-handed, and I was terrible, Joe. I couldn't, I was a terrible softball player anyways, but I didn't come close to, hitting the ball left-handed. It's hard. If you don't work at it, it is really, really difficult.
When I was in high school, every Sunday night with the church youth group, we'd get together and play on the field out behind the church. And it was a 12U baseball field that had 200-foot fences, and we were, high school sophomores and juniors. And in one game, I hit a home run right-handed and a home run left-handed over the 200-foot fence.
Carlos Baerga.
There you go. I didn't do it in the same inning, but it was fun. And I'm just like Anthony Rendon, right? That's the simple comparison there. But you're right. It takes a little bit to do what he did. So, and Reed Detmers, first individual no hitter of the season last year. We set a record.
Yeah, it was like seven or eight, maybe seven or nine. No,
I think the record was seven. I think we got to nine.
Yeah,
last year, and think about it. Three of those came against the Guardians. This Guardians lineup, though, pretty. You feel safe saying they're maybe no hit proof?
After last year, I don't feel safe about anything, Joe. I mean, any lineup can be no hit on a certain on the right day, I think.
Well, I the approach is different, definitely, yeah, this year.
I'll give you that.
You know, guys like Miles Straw, Stephen Kwan at the top of the lineup, I think, you know, that gives you at least, what, you know, what, 6-8 chances, you know, in a game where those two guys come up and, you know, at least put the bat on the ball and put the ball in play and make you play defense on it. Chances to have a no-hitter thrown against you really drop at that point. So,
well, Monday night, Kopech didn't give up a hit till the fifth inning. So, you know, it's always lurking out there.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I what'd you write? You wrote 3-4 no-hit stories last year.
Then Tampa Bay no-hit him in the doubleheader, one of the seven-inning doubleheaders.
The notable accomplishment, I guess, is what they called it or whatever. Aaron Civale going against Vince Velasquez today at Guaranteed Rate Field. Civale coming off of his best outing of the year. Velasquez 2-2, the 3.97 ERA and 21 strikeouts. What are we hoping to see here out of the Guardians?
Yeah, you know, I think Civale said he wanted to build on that last start, that it gave him something to build on. I'm anxious to see Velasquez. We haven't seen him. He was pitched for San Diego and the Phillies last year. So, you know, we'll have to, you know, get, and they really didn't announce him until last night. You know, it was undetermined who was going to start this game. So, I think the, you know, Guardians are getting a first look at this guy, and we'll see what happens.
Jose Abreu, a 133 lifetime average against Aaron Civale in 15 at bats. So hopefully there's a chance there to keep him in check as well. All right, Hoynsy, afternoon game, and then get away to Minnesota. We will talk to you again at some point tomorrow here on the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast.
Good deal, Joe.